grisly one.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of five, ahead of the nor'easter, or as they're calling it again, the bomb cyclone. We'll have Bill Evans on that momentarily, but what a loser. What a loser your mayor is. Not mine. I didn't vote for him the first time and certainly not the second time. Comrade Bill de Blasio, the part-time mayor, the dope from Park Slope, who believed that he had a new chancellor for the Board of Education to replace the outgoing Farina. That's why I will never eat Farina again. Used to be my favorite. I didn't like Wheatina. I didn't like Quaker Oats. I didn't like Maple. I love Farina. But when she had become chancellor of the DOE, acronym stands for Dumbest Organization Everywhere, Department of Education, I had had it. But then she decided to retire, and the de Blasio administration went on a search. And you know what it reminded me of when all was said and done? I'll get to that momentarily. But the search led them to Miami-Dade County. And I thought, when I looked at this guy, who looked like he was a star out of some novella, out of Mexico City or Sao Paulo, the guy was like the second coming of Ricardo Montalban.
My dear guests, welcome to Fantasy Island.
Because it turned out to be a fantasy. An absolute fantasy in that he acted like he was coming to New York City, having been invited by Mayor de Blasio at an outrageous amount of money to work the job as chancellor, when, in effect, he was doing the double dutch. What do I mean by that? At a press conference that was held about 12 noon, the whole city was watching. I think all the networks cleared for coverage. They just assumed he was going to announce, "I'm on my way." On Northeast Airlines, that's right. I'm on my way on Pan Am Airlines to New York City, the way you used to travel down to Miami and back, remember? Remember? But then he had this to say.
Against probably my personal best interest, I am making a decision and announcing a decision today after speaking with the Honorable Mayor Bill de Blasio, that I shall remain in Miami-Dade as your superintendent.
Now, that was in front of the house crowd there. People who had been begging him, beseeching him not to go. He was the long-sitting chancellor of education down there. And he gave us the impression that he had capitulated to that. And then all of a sudden, our mayor, Comrade Bill de Blasio, he sounded like Gomer Pyle. He really did. It was like a throwback to years ago.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Because it was a surprise. And then the mayor addressed the phalanx of reporters who were asking, "I thought you had this guy wine dined and signed."
I was probably more surprise and confusion that this could happen than anything. Of course, you know, I'm really disappointed. I'm not going to get lost in the past. My job is now to move forward. And as I said, the search has resumed already.
The search has resumed. On the line to discuss that, Ben Chapman, educational reporter for New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. Thanks for jumping on board the drive home at 5 again, Ben.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
All right, so try to explain to me this soap opera, this novella that involved a guy who looked like he could have been a runway model or Ronaldo's twin brother there on the Portuguese national soccer team, and our mayor, Bill de Blasio.
Right. Well, so Mayor de Blasio has been searching for a replacement for the outgoing chancellor, Carmen Farina, for some time now, at least a couple of months. It's been a search that he's conducted in secret. And apparently, for a number of weeks, he's been in contact with Alberto down in Miami. and had reached a verbal agreement with Alberto that he would take the job, that Carvalho would take the job, and then Carvalho, you know, surprised us all today with that 4.5 hour emergency school board meeting in Miami, where he, you know, surprise, surprise, said that he's not taking the job.
Now, what do you think was the rationale behind that? Or was he just getting nervous coming into New York, having to deal with people like you, Ben? Because obviously there's a big media sector in Miami, both English and Spanish, but they're not all that intense. Do you think it was the intensity of the New York press corps that scared him off?
Well, it's entirely possible, to be honest with you. That's my opinion. I mean, the guy did have some skeletons in, or does have some skeletons in his closet. He did, you know, he was accused of having an affair with a much younger reporter 10 years ago. And when emails detailing the affair, or that were allegedly sent between the two of them that were pretty lurid, were published, the reporter quit her job and, you know, ended her career in journalism.
But Ben, yes, it sounds to me like with that kind of resume or that partial resume, he would have fit right into the culture here in New York.
Well, you know, I think that honestly, you know, who knows what else was back there? I started to do a little looking myself, and I thought it looked, you know, the guy had already been nailed once. You know, what else was back there? So you never know. You know,
right.
Additionally, there were some pretty significant, you know, dramatic academic gains that happened under his watch in Miami. I haven't examined those at all, but usually when academic indicators change dramatically over a short period of time, you know, this is something that, you know, bears some investigation.
Well, yeah, particularly since they're claiming that everyone was passing in Miami-Dade. I've been there, spent a lot of time in Liberty City, Overtown, Little Haiti, Little Havana. These are crime-ridden areas with a lot of juvenile delinquency, a lot of kids who aren't doing that well in the public school system, a lot of kids who can't even speak English. And according to the reports, everybody passed there, everybody.
And we're seeing that in D.C. right now, they're revising the grad rates downward after they're determining that a lot of those students didn't actually graduate. So who knows what his rationale was for flaming out in such a spectacular fashion.
But now, Ben, what was the agreement? What did it entail salary-wise and also in terms of any other tchotchkes or compensation he would receive?
You know, the salary that he was going to receive was $118,000 more than what Carmen Farina is currently receiving. It's going to be about $350,000+, I believe. So it was a lot of money, and it was controversial here because people were saying, well, you know, why are you giving this guy from out of town so much more money than you're giving Farina, who has worked in the city schools for 5 decades?
And Ben, years ago, it may have changed when the Board of Education became the Department of Education and moved from 110 Livingston Street to Tammany Hall. But the chancellor also used to get a brownstone. I think it was in Prospect Heights. Do you know if they sold that brownstone, or is that still part of the deal, you know, the sweetheart deal?
I don't know anything about that. I know that Farina has a place in Carroll Gardens that she, you know, maintains as her residence in town. I don't know if she has a separate one as well. I know that she has a car and driver, but as far as her home, as far as I know, she has a regular apartment that she's had for a while with her husband.
So this is pretty embarrassing.
Embarrassing, yes, sir.
Do you think we give Mayor de Blasio the benefit of the doubt here because he thought he had a handshake deal, or is it just like so many other things, he seems to be distracted? Seems there's a deflection. You know, this second term seems to be more about setting a national agenda than attending to details locally.
Well, he's having a bit of a shocker of a school year so far. We had the murder of the kid in school back in September. There was a shooting in a school some weeks ago, which both of which are very rare occurrences that are very worrisome to a lot of parents. then we have this sort of ongoing trouble with finding a new chancellor, and it's been a search that he's conducted in secret. People aren't happy. They want to be in on what he's doing in terms of the search. And people were caught off guard when he named that Carvalho was going to get the job. And now Carvalho is, you know, abruptly, you know, said he's not taking the job in a shocking move. De Blasio's spokesman is slamming Carvalho on Twitter, saying, you know, who would ever hire this guy again after he embarrassed us like this? And so the question is, how badly does this harm the city's ability to hire a true leader for the nation's largest school system?
Well, real quick, if you remember back in the days of Mayor Dinkins, he brought up Fernandez, who was the head of Miami-Dade at that time, the school system. He didn't do all that well. And Rudy Crewe, after he was sent on his way by Rudy Giuliani, eventually became the chancellor down again in Miami-Dade before he came back to be the chancellor of Medgar Evers College now. What is it about this attraction of the Miami-Dade School District and New York's Board of Education?
I don't know. I mean, there are some demographic similarities between the two districts. However, the city district is about, you know, nearly, I guess, almost four times the size of the district in Miami. So there's a big difference there.
Well, certainly do appreciate that. That's Ben Chapman, educational reporter for New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. But think of this. We've been down this road before. Let me pull a rabbit out of the hat of the Curtis Lewis Super Sports Spectacular. Jet fans, remember, it was back on, what was it, January 2nd of 2000, that we were told that the Cleveland Browns coach, Coach Belichick, was going to be the coach of the New York Jets. Remember that, Brian Mongalucci? Remember, Jet fans were like euphoric. They were having knockers. And then all of a sudden, the next day, by January 4th, we realized he had dissed and dismissed the Jets and the Jet fans. He was on his way to becoming the New England Patriots coach. He's been there ever since. And it struck me that the wrath of Khan was upon us.
Ah, Kirk, my old friend. Do you know the Klingon proverb that tells us revenge is a dish that is best served cold? It is very cold in space.
Doesn't Ricardo Montalban's voice sound very much like Alberto Carvalho, pendejo?
And I wonder, still I wonder, who's stopped the rain?
Ah, more fear, fright, hysteria. But is there hype being brought to these airwaves by weather guy Bill Evans of Channel 7 Eyewitness News, who says we're going to get hit with another bomb cyclone, a nor'easter? Bill, first off, could you explain what the hell a bomb cyclone is?
The hell? No, you got more of a chance of getting one of those Jameson bomb cyclones than you have coming at you with a real bomb cyclone.
Yeah, well, what exactly is it? Because this is like the second time around that we're hearing this term. You've never heard it used before.
Oh, my gosh, it's stupid. You know, this is just a real good old-fashioned nor'easter. You know, it's a low-pressure system, which does make it, you know, a cyclone, but it's not that. This is a real good old-fashioned nor'easter we've been talking about since, you know, Alexander Hamilton walked down in Lower Manhattan. So this is a storm that starts out as rain, turns over to ice and snow, goes back to rain. It's our worst storm. You know, I know over the winter you and I talk about blizzards and we talk about snow amounts and all that kind of thing. This storm is far worse than those because it contains all those elements. And then you add wind on top of it. And this has got a lot of wind with it as it gets to us tomorrow. The worst of the wind, 55 miles an hour in the city, 65 at the coast, that's tropical storm strength. You know, and then the other thing is, in Manhattan, we got buildings, you know, and the canyoning effect through the buildings almost doubles that wind speed. So that's why a nor'easter like this is far worse than any blizzards that we get.
I would think also, because we've had our fair share of precipitation, of rain, of snow, of sleet, that the ground is already fully saturated.
Yeah, and that's the problem because, you know, we're only, I mean, we're looking at about 2.5 inches of rain. It's going to start, you know, in about the next hour or so. It's already raining in Jersey now. But it's, the rain is going to come down its heaviest after midnight till about 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And that's why the flooding will be its worst during the morning commute tomorrow. And everything is saturated. You know, we got some streams and creeks that are bank full. And, you know, we have a real tight geography here in that these streams and creeks are not all that deep to begin with. And so when they're at bank full already, you're going to have these flooding issues tomorrow. And that will be right during the morning commute because the rain will have started, you know, many hours prior to the commute. So you have the runoff, and that's what collects and creates a lot of flooding. I think you have two types of flooding tomorrow. You're going to have flooding from at 6 a.m. on the south shore of Long Island and right around the New York City area from the coast itself. We got a full moon out there. We've got the wind that's going to be coming up from the southwest in the beginning with this system, right into the south shore of Long Island. And then we've got the normal tide cycle itself at high tide at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. So South Queens, Jamaica Bay, is going to flood tomorrow at 6 and 7 o'clock in the morning, and so is southern Nassau County. So if you're in those counties, you're Freeport, any of those counties right along the beach there, Nassau County, over to Queens, Jamaica Bay, in that area, you will have flooding tomorrow. The tide's going to run 2.5, maybe even 3 feet above normal. So you know where your sea level is at your home, most of all of us residents.
Well, speaking of sea level, Bill Evans, very quickly, how much beach nourishment is going to have to be done? How many of the beaches along the coastline do you figure are going to lose sizable amounts of sand tomorrow?
You're going to have waves in the Atlantic of 20 to 30 feet. So by the time that gets to the beach areas, particularly Jersey Shore, eastern end of Long Island, you're going to have a real hit from this storm. So there's going to have to be beach replenishment. And let's just hope this is the only one, because March is a month that starts like a lion and ends like a lamb. Or, you know, as John Belushi said back in the 70s, starts out as a frog and ends as a golden retriever. You know, it's a month of extremes in March, and we might have 2-3 more of these before we get into, you know, spring and the swing of it headed towards summer.
Well, I'll tell you what, since it's going to be a full moon, it'll be the wolf call that goes out there. As there's snow and rain, and it's unseasonably mild in the North Pole, that Santa Claus, Mrs. Claus, the reindeers, and the elves are moving out. I think we can attribute it to the full moon and the nor'easter.
Five with Curtis
Sliwa. He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
WABCRadio.com.
Hand me down. That's the bank. Now you're pumped. You got to get ready for the big payback.
The big payback.
That's where I land. Oh, for the big payback.
542. Godfather of Soul, Soul Brother number one. He was the man on the big 125 at the Apollo Theater when he was strutting his stuff, James Brown. And it's the perfect entry song for Johnny A. Light to once again reappear here on the Drive Home at 5. For those of you who don't know, he's the former mafia enforcer for John Gotti and the Gambino crime family. There's been a break between him and John Gotti Jr., but he's got a brand new book out called John A. Light, Darkest Hour. Thanks for jumping on board again, Johnny.
Thank you, Curtis, for having me back again. I appreciate it.
Now, many times when I'm out and about, I'll run across people who are very supportive of John Gotti Jr., and they'll say, Johnny A. Light, he's pimped off of this so-called friendship. He was a person of no consequence. And then I say to them, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Gotti Jr. was your best man at your wedding in Queens. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, you're correct. That's true.
So how does a person of no consequence that he wouldn't even park his car as a valet parker there at Russo's on the Bay on Cross Bay Boulevard, how is it that all of a sudden he was your best man?
Well, the guy's obviously, I mean, you know the guy. The guy's a brat that talks out of the side of his mouth, but now that he was chased out of the mafia, he was shelved. He goes behind a typewriter and he talks nonsense. And, you know, just what you said, gibberish. You know, he didn't have the guts to go after you personally and try to send guys. You know, with me out here personally, I live in the neighborhood still. Nobody comes to see me. Matter of fact, I hurt half his family. So, you know, the stuff that people talk is without knowledge. You got a guy like John Gotti Jr. who's out in the street, and in his own rat papers, when they found out he was an informant, said that he was going to open up the Bronx House of Detention. It's in his paperwork. That's not out of my mouth. That's out of him hoping to make people suffer in jail and die in jail the way his father did. So he just talks, and he's a coward. We know what he is. You know what he is.
All right, but John A., like, you know him better than most. There was recently an article in a magazine that said he's had an epiphany, meaning John Gotti Jr., out at his Ponderosa and Oyster Bay Cove, that he's now dedicating his life to being a crime fighter.
Behind and killed him. Was solved the murder of Robin Fatula that his uncle raped and put in a garbage can. Since he wants to be a crime fighter, start there. Start at home. And then we'll believe that he's a crime fighter. And this nonsense, this guy's spooning out. And this guy got chased out of a mob, so I guess he's scared of the guys. And he's scared to, pop out in public. The last time he did, he got stabbed up at CVS. So that's his life now. His life is in hiding and writing and typing behind a computer. So... you know, this is what he's resorted to. It's nonsense.
Now, one of the things I see is that you did some time in a Brazilian jail. I see they've moved the military into Rio de Janeiro. The crime is so bad there. How bad was bad in that jail for you?
I mean, the circumstances in Brazilian jails are in reports from senators from their country to our country to around the world. Those situations there, those jails are different living conditions, weapons inside the jail are rampant. You go to the bathroom and the floor, and you're involved in violent behavior here. One or two murders in jail here is a lot there. You get dozens that die in a prison system there, so a year. So people that are involved with the system and advocates understand that they never let an advocate group in the prison I was in. Ever, not once, back when I was there at the time. They were never allowed in the jail. That's how bad it was. So those are facts that have to be looked up and confirmed.
Now, you claim that you've seen a different light. You're following a different path. People know that you've murdered before. You've extorted money. You were a prime-time gangster. You had earned your stripes in the Gambino crime family, working side-by-side with John Gotti Jr. Why should people believe it, you now, John A. Light, that you've turned that corner?
Well, you know, first off, I didn't work side by side with John Gotti Jr. He stayed at home while I did all those things you just said. He hid while I did the work. This is not a guy that goes out and is aggressive himself. He's a coward. He stays at home and let guys like me do it. So my message is simple. I lived a bad life. I don't say I wasn't didn't do bad things and lived by bad rules. I'm out here now trying to advocate for kids not to follow those footsteps. Don't let a guy like John Gotti Jr. sit at home and give you orders when he's a coward sitting at home. That same guy that was giving those orders, look what he's saying now. Now he's a crime fighter because his daddy's gone. So, you know, everybody knows what kind of guy he is. The street guys know what he is. And I want the kids to understand that these guys live by that code of nothing. They're cowards that allow stay at home while they make guys like me do it. So, you know, really my message is to make sure kids don't live the way I live. And I'm hoping I can save one or two kids at the same time. And that's what the book Darkest Hour is about. Susan Pike did a great job, I think, showing, you know, when you grow up in the environment that I grew up and other kids are growing up, you think that's your only chance at life and you're mistaken. There's so many other ways out of the gutter, out of that environment, and take a positive path. And really that's my message, a positive path to these kids. And don't follow this nonsense about guys like Gotti, because you know better than most. This guy just has a big mouth, and that's about it. And he's got a typewriter these days. He doesn't use bullets. He never used them then. He had guys to use them.
Understood. That's Johnny A. Light. His book, as he mentioned, The Darkest Hour. You can pre-order now at Amazon.com. It's out and about. And, you know... the interesting thing is, Johnny A. Light has said, as an Albanian bad boy, he's turned the corner. the proof will obviously be in what he does. But I had a real good belly laugh. This men's magazine had a full spread on John Gotti Jr. at his Ponderosa, his Palazzo there in Oyster Bay Cove. He claims he lives a life in poverty. He's probably digging up the Medaglia d'Oro cans with all the ill-gotten gain he got over the years, and that's how he survives and feeds his family. But now he claims that he's a crime fighter. Who's more believable, John Gotti Jr. as a crime fighter? Or Johnny A. Light as a guy who's turned the corner from being an Albanian bad boy? I'll leave it to you guys to figure it out.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
General Mills from Battle Creek, Michigan, let the leprechaun out of the bag ahead of St. Patrick's Day. I know they start, the first parade is out in the Irish Riviera, the Rockaways this Saturday. Then they got the one on Forest Avenue, you know, in Staten Island on Sunday. And then it's a whole month with the big one up Fifth Avenue. But are you aware that in Battle Creek, Michigan, they made a decision, a tactical decision, to add a unicorn marshmallow to their traditional Lucky Charms? And you know why? Because a new study came out that Brian Mongolucci was bragging about, because his favorite ESPN program, no longer on the air, I might add, Cold Pizza, that a nutritionist claims that cold pizza is a healthier breakfast than cold cereal with milk, lactate, 2% milk, the whole nine yards. And this is interesting because this would be something that Michael Savage would be an expert on. Because, you know, everyone, you all defer to him. You call him a doctor. He's got a doctorate in nutrition. He can run a cafeteria in a public school system with the blue-haired matrons. Can any of you call in tomorrow and ask him, hey, Dr. Savage, you can doctor this. Is there more nutrition in cold pizza in the morning than cold cereal?